Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. We're going to talk about something that's universal. It's not always talked about, and that's affairs, people cheating on one another. Had a dear friend over recently, our house, and he opened up about his pain about finding out his wife was having an affair on him, and how he was kind of clueless and hurt and just the devastation of that. So if you've been devastated by that, we have some help for you today. And we have a couple coming on here in just a few seconds, Brian and Ann Birch, and they have been through some of these things themselves, but they also have help for both the cheater and the cheaty. So we'll be back in a few seconds. How do you recover from an affair? Stay tuned here. Richard Rossi Live. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. And welcome, Brian and Ann.
Welcome. Hello. It's nice to be here, Richard.
Thank you.
Tell us how this, your own crisis, how this whole thing started, where the two of you have a passion now to help couples and save marriages, strengthen families, help those that have been devastated by a spouse maybe that's run off and left them for someone else. How did this kind of organically happen in your own lives by going through some things, huh?
Who is starting? I think I'll let Brian explain maybe a little bit how he got there. But from my perspective, we actually had a good marriage. And in fact, the night that Brian came home and told me about his affair, I remember I had just come from voice lessons and I was singing in my car and I was singing the Toni Braxton song, Unbreak My Heart.
Song, it breaks my heart every time I hear it. What a song.
Exactly, and I was thinking, wow, I love this song, and it's right in my range, but boy, these lyrics are depressing. It's a good thing I have such a great marriage, and this would never happen to me. And I just think it's very ironic that those were my thoughts as I was actually driving home to hear a confession from my husband that he had been having an affair. And when Brian told me those words, and as I think devastation is the word most often used, I literally went into shock. I never moved from my chair the entire night. I sat there all night, wide awake, barely made it over to get my kids to school the next morning, and it was like I couldn't function. And the next 3 months that ensued after that, our once happy role model family was just caught in a chaos, and it was really craziness. And the next 3 months, I would say, we began to really face the issues head on. Now, we reached out for help at that time, and our personal story is now 15 years ago. And while I'll always be thankful for what help we did receive, to be honest, we found at that time a lot of the help was damaging because the focus was on asking the question, what was wrong in the marriage that caused the affair? And what Brian and I have found today is while certainly marriages with problems are more vulnerable to affairs than marriages without problems, there doesn't actually need to be problems in a marriage for an affair to take place. So in the past, that very premise, that approach towards counseling is leading people astray from finding the real answers because there are no perfect people and there are no perfect marriages. There's no perfect relationships. So if we go looking for the problem, we'll always find one. And then we can often wrongly blame that on the affair and it leads us astray from finding the real root causes. But facing the issues head on was probably one of the wisest things Brian and I did in getting through it. And when we hit about the six-month mark post-disclosure, and, I mean, there's just so much to the story. It's always hard to give a brief version. I think people listening need to understand that I did not recommit myself to the marriage till about 2 years after that confession. It was just that I did receive some very good advice from some friends, and that's certainly advice that I would pass on to anyone going through this. And because I was packing my bags to leave, and these friends said, "Ann, you know, we have seen you and Brian together. We know Brian loves you. We don't understand why he did what he did. We don't understand what's going on right now. And if you want to leave the marriage, you have every right to do so. We just encourage you not to do it while you're in the emotion of the moment." Mm. And so that was very helpful. That kept me from packing my bags on the first day. So it wasn't like I recommitted to the marriage. It was just that I chose to give the marriage a chance before throwing the towel in on an 18-year marriage. So, you know, after 6 months, the intensity of the arguing and the pain was less. We were in a more stable place, but that lingering sadness and some of the triggers from the affair, you know, trying to find the meanings, that it did take 2 years for me to be able to recommit myself to the relationship and to forgive Brian. And I would say that my feelings, you know, letting go of the sadness was probably a little longer than that, another 6 months or so. So that's kind of what it looked like in a nutshell from my perspective.
Mm. You said something really profound, that the common wisdom that, you know, something was wrong. Do you think that can lead to, you know, kind of a blaming of the victim in the sense of, like, I saw a faith healer once and pray for a person in a wheelchair and basically, you know, chastise them. Oh, if you had enough faith, you would walk out of this wheelchair. So I got very angry at the evangelist because I thought, you know, here's a person suffering and you've heaped further blame on them. And do you think that some of the help that wasn't helpful would tend to want to beat up or blame you as a couple, that, you know, there must be a problem here rather than how can we heal this situation?
Absolutely. Well, that. Oh, go ahead, Brian.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, that's one of the things that you know, it's further punishment of the person who's been betrayed. And I guess so, those are the things that, you know, we stereotypically think that we should be able to recognize when a person is vulnerable to an affair. And I was certainly, in my own case, I didn't, you know, when I looked at my relationship with Ann, I was completely satisfied in my marriage with her, and I wasn't upset. Our relationship was good. We actually, you know, I was one of those, you know, those guys that when my wife suggested I read a book, I actually picked it up and read it myself, and I applied some of those things. So I really, you know, believe that I was I really felt immune on some level to the, you know, that I would fall into this affair, and I wasn't really aware of what I needed to do. I wasn't aware of how it happened, so then I wasn't aware of how to prevent it from taking place. And as many, you know, in the work we do, and we, you know, work with, you know, well over 1,000 couples, and it is the kind of the most common thing that I, you know, that people sometimes can just sort of fall into it. And while, you know, half the group, you know, half the people who have either if they've been betrayed or they haven't, they can go, well, how could you just do that? Well, it sort of just happens because you're not on your guard to, you know, to pay attention to what was going on, as I wasn't in my own life, and the emotional connection I met with the person at my place of work started off it kind of rather a benign relationship, as many do, and it kind of just worked itself into this, you know, into this, the state where all of a sudden, I felt almost compulsed to meet with this person, and the attraction began to grow, even though it wasn't necessarily a physical attraction as much as it was the emotional attraction to something that I was receiving from this individual. And so looking back, you know, going back to your question, Richard, about, you know, the betrayed person being blamed for what they, you know, somebody else's actions. Simply, I have a litmus test that I will just kind of, you know, for the listeners, is If you're responsible, the only way Anne could have been responsible for anything of what I've done in the relation in my affair is if she gave me permission to do so. And because I didn't really ask her for permission, I didn't say, "Hey, Anne, by the way, I'm thinking of having this relationship with this other woman. Well, would it be okay?" And even if I did and she said no, then she still would not be responsible. So that's kind of the litmus test. But you know, back to what when it all started to unfold, then of course my natural tendency is to kind of go, well, you know, obviously there must be something wrong in the relationship, or else I wouldn't be doing this. Which is, I'm buying into the myth of why people, you know, end up in an affair, and it's for the wrong reasons. They're not looking for the true reasons, you know, that we help, you know, with couples discover today. And I wasn't aware of them in my own life, so I certainly became vulnerable to that, and I acted out in a poor way. And so originally I did blame my wife for what I've done, and I said, well, you know, if you would have done this or if you'd have done that, and I found, you know, the original blame that I had for Anne, Richard, which is kind of a laugh, you know, it's so silly, but it's sort of almost laughably, like, really, was that I told her, I said, well, you know, you didn't really like sports very much, and the other woman did, and so that, which I, when you think about it, you kind of go, well, is that really grounds for, you know, ending a 18-year relationship with someone that you love and that you have three children with and you've grown a life together with? And but, you know, that's the craziness of my own thought process at that time. So, did I blame Anne? I did, because I didn't understand what I needed to look for, and I didn't understand that my affair was completely about me. And it wasn't about my relationship. It wasn't about the other woman. It was completely about myself. The self-centered, really what I like to say is that betraying your spouse is probably the second most selfish act that you can do within the term of a relationship, in term of a committed relationship. You know, and I guess the first being suicide, because you can't really do anything about that once that's happened. So that's, you know, that's my viewpoint around that, Richard.
And by the way, those of you listening, there's a lot of help that Anne and Brian have at their website, beyondaffairs.com. Beyondaffairs.com. They have coaches, they have seminars, and some great people that have been through this and can help you if you're devastated by this. You mentioned the emotional connection. Is it harder, Anne and Brian? Maybe this would be to Anne first, I guess. Do you think it's harder for women, and this is going to sound generalizing, but women value that emotional connection? Is it harder on the woman to forgive if there's an emotional connection the man has to the other woman rather than just sex?
That would depend on the woman. Having worked with so many, I find them all to be a little bit different on what they value. And, you know, I find that in general, using that word harder and comparing is just not useful, because for anybody going through this, it's like nobody can describe to you what it feels like to be on that betrayed side. It really is one of the most painful things that you can go through. And I think that anybody that's not been through it, everybody knows that it's bad, and everybody knows that they don't want it to happen to them. But to the degree of how bad it is, you really can't comprehend it until you're in that place. There's something about the person that you love and trust the most in the world being the perpetrator of the crime, if you will, doing this action that betrays, like, intimacy, whether it's emotional intimacy or physical intimacy or both, betraying that part that belongs between the husband and wife in the marriage relationship, and that close person being the betrayer, betraying the closest part of you, it's just so hard. Some women that I've dealt with, the betrayal is with pornography. It's not even with a real woman, and that is devastating to them. So that's why I've learned to not compare the pain. And it's the same sometimes that, you know, I hear people say, well, it's harder for a man to forgive when his wife has been unfaithful than for a woman to forgive. And I find when you start saying things like that, you know, for any woman, like, it is not easy. It is one of the hardest things in the world, you know, no matter where you are. Probably if there were something that made it harder or easier, it would be that individual's experience with forgiveness and with pain. People who have learned some skills in forgiveness, if you will, because they've forgiven other things in the past, may have a greater transition over into forgiving something this big rather than people who've had a closer to picture perfect life without a lot of pain and suffering, and then suddenly this something this big comes in and they're less equipped to deal with it than somebody which has dealt with a lot of pain already, if that makes sense.
It sure does. I'm going to just give a contact for questions to come in here for those of you that don't have it. You can now email your questions for Brian and Ann to richardrossilive@gmail.com, richardrossilive@gmail.com, or text to 818-850-5915. You can also text the question to 818-850-5915. How do you, Brian and Ann, when you counsel couples, guide them to know whether to stay or leave? How do you assess that, you know, whether they can fix it and heal it as you two have and now celebrated your 34th anniversary? Congratulations. That's awesome. And you have three children, three grandchildren. When is the point where it's over, it's irreparable, or, you know, I think we can salvage this?
Well, one of the things that that we will encourage couples to do is not make a decision too quickly. As Ann alluded to earlier, that, you know, it took her 2 years for her to fully commit back to the relationship. And we encourage couples, you know, not to make a decision too quickly because most of the time people make a decision. If you make a decision in kind of a hasty fashion, it will most often leads to regret later on. There's plenty enough time to end a relationship and terminate that. Especially if there's children involved and family and things like that, there's plenty enough time to do that. So we encourage, you know, couples to work at the relationship. And we encourage couples to, you know, to kind of do it in sort of 4 month blocks of time. I would encourage the person who's betrayed to look for the necessary steps that the person who's acted unfaithfully, so that they do it consistently for a period of time. I have a saying in my that hangs in my office. It says that when people are first discovered, they promise much. When they've newly engaged in recovery, they do something, but after a while, they forget all. And so what we encourage people is make sure that there's got to be consistent, measurable growth from the time of devastation, or really from the time we get to work with them, because we meet people at all various stages of discovery. Some they call us, like, you know, 2 days later. Some call us 10 years later. And so they're all in different places. But from the time we get to work with them, we say, okay, there should be some measurable growth in terms of their actions and behaviors, the dialogue between them, the work, the developing trust, and change. There needs to be changed behaviors. And if there's we encourage people to measure that, so that, you know, in the heat of the moment. You know, couples can have a great moment at any, you know, every once in a while there can be some nostalgia moment that they look back on and they can think, okay, you know, well, maybe we can make it. Maybe we're over it. And we encourage couples not to forgive too quickly, because cheap forgiveness or quick forgiveness is generally cheap forgiveness. So it has to be a measurable thing, because as much as you can feel nostalgic and all warm and fuzzy to that person, like, you know, 6 months or, you know, 2 months later or sometimes even 2 weeks later, 6 months down the road, you can also have one of those, you can have one of those trigger moments when all of a sudden you just, you know, the darkness just kind of grips you and comes over the relationship. And then if you don't have something that you can look back on and kind of go, okay, well, we have moved from here to there so that I don't have to just terminate it all because I have a bad day today. And so in terms of making decisions, yeah, give it some time. If the person who's acted unfaithfully doesn't do the work consistently, you know, it doesn't. They don't have to do it perfectly, but they have to show consistent effort and energy they're putting in. Because if they don't do it in 4 months, they're not going to do it in 4 years. So if there's growth in 4 months, great. Then you might consider another 4 months, and then another 4 months, and pretty soon you're at 2 years, like Ann and I were. And it doesn't have to take this 2 years is not the magic number, but there's a period of time when all of a sudden you kind of go, you know what, I actually think I can fully commit back to the relationship. I can forgive, and we can kind of move forward. And there's time for that, because the relationship will never be the same as it was prior to the betrayal. And we're only going to, you know, our belief is that it has to be better. It can't go back to the way it was. Not that the relationship was a problem for the affair, but you don't want to go back to the way it was. You want to use all the effort and energy that you put into recovery to make your relationship better than it was before. Even if you had a good relationship, you want to have a great relationship.
And for those of you listening, we're going to be going to questions now. And if you want to reach out to Brian and Ann, their website is beyondaffairs.com, beyondaffairs.com. Ann and Brian have helped counsel and coach couples that have been through this. And so you're still live, Brian and Ann, but I'm just going to take a quick break here and look at these questions. We'll just be back in a few seconds. We're talking about surviving infidelity, the devastation, and help for both parties, the one that's been cheated on and the one that's done the cheating. So I'll be back with your questions here in a few seconds. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and we have a question for Ann and Brian. This woman writes from Missouri that she was cheated on by her husband, and this phrase Brian used, cheap forgiveness, struck her. She said, my pastor and church friends say I have to forgive as my trespasses were forgiven, but I know in my heart I haven't forgiven yet, and how do I know when I've forgiven, and what do I say to Christians who pressure me that I need to forgive right away before I'm ready to?
That's a great point that she's making, and I think, you know, because Brian and I are Christians, and so I understand where the church is coming from, but there tends to be that pressure to forgive right away, and while that is true that God can't forgive us if we can't forgive others, what's wrong with that picture is it the way that it's being done is it's dishonoring the healing process. If Brian broke my arm and then he said, oh, I'm really sorry I broke your arm, Ann, I'll never break your arm again, and, you know, I can forgive him for breaking my arm, but for heaven's sake, my arm's still broken. And we need to get me to the hospital, and I need to see a doctor, and we need to find out what's wrong and set this bone back in place and then cover it with a cast so it's protected and it can't be re-injured and give it some time to heal. And, you know, in essence, that's what needs to happen as well. So, and forgiveness is a journey and a process. True forgiveness takes time. Forgiveness is a choice that we make. So maybe early on you can make a choice that, you know, I'm not going to become a negative, bitter person, and I will find a way through this, but to say, you know, now it's forgiven, it's in the past, we need to forget about it, let's not look at it, that would not be correct. And sometimes, Brian and I like to draw an analogy to, you know, when there's a plane crash, how about we apply that there? Let's just forgive everybody. It's over. You know, we can't get back. All those hundreds of passengers have died, and this bad thing happened. Let's not focus on the past. Let's just move on and forgive it. That's not how it's done. There's an investigation that goes into, like, what happened? Why did the plane crash? How did we get here in the first place? What things need to change in the future so that we can ensure that we don't have plane crashes in the future? And you say, well, why are we looking at the past? Well, to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So, and forgiveness, you know, in the true sense, that includes a reconciliation as a couple, has to do with the work that happens. And my trust, for example, that would be one of the parts of the healing process, is restoring trust in the relationship. And a lot of times what happens is people think, well, the person said they're sorry, they promised never to do it again, I should just trust them. Well, if promises were adequate, I think the wedding vows would have been adequate in the first place. Mm. And so my trust in Brian today is not based on him saying, I'm really sorry, I promise never to do it again. My trust in Brian today is based on the fact that he was willing to do the personal growth work to look at himself and how he got there in the first place and to make appropriate changes. I actually, even though our marriage was good before, our marriage is better today, and I experience Brian differently in the relationship. And my trust in Brian today is not a blind and a naive trust, but it's an educated trust based on his self-reflection and personal growth work so that he understands why he did what he did. And that's, so again, it's not a naive trust, it's an educated trust. And that's all part of the forgiveness and the healing journey if you're going to reconcile a relationship.
Mm. Wow, that metaphor of the broken arm is so good. I can imagine just the comedy of, hey, I've forgiven you. We don't need to take you to the emergency room. Forgive me. Hey, I'm sorry. Jesus forgives. You know, we don't need that cast on that arm.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it just takes time for the healing to take place. And forgiveness goes in stages. You know, for me, there's first making a choice to forgive. And when it's pushed too soon, it just is dishonoring for the pain that has actually happened. That's all. And, and then I reached a place where, you know, I was willing to, like, say, yeah, I am going to forgive you and work through it. And that was it. But it wasn't until really the healing process had been honored that I was able to fully recommit to the relationship, and then it becomes a really meaningful forgiveness. I think it's important when people look at forgiveness to understand, you know, because what the word forgiveness means to different people is very different. And at best, you know, we could distinguish between two levels of forgiveness, and one being a level of forgiveness that one might do even if it's not possible to restore the relationship. And that would be what Webster's Dictionary defines as, you know, releasing your feelings of anger, hatred, murder, revenge, punishment, wanting to punish the person for what they did. Those angry, bitter feelings, releasing those is like a first level of forgiveness, which you can do that level even if the relationship is never reconciled. And frankly, it's not good to be in an abusive relationship if your spouse was continuing to have affairs or refusing to be willing to give you what you needed to heal after their actions. I mean, it's not wise to be in an abusive relationship and continuing to subject yourself. And I would say that if your spouse is continuing to have affairs, that is abusive. It's emotionally abusive.
Good advice, Anne.
Yeah.
Since we're just literally having a moment left, could you And I'm going to ask for their grace to go a few seconds over, but could you sum up how people can reach you, what kind of help's available, you know, just let people know what resources that you two have.
Well, good, Richard. One of the so obviously our website is kind of has a tremendous amount of resources on it. BeyondAffairs.com is a we would encourage you to look at, you know, to go to that website, our homepage. We have a number of different avenues that we help couples with, whether it be through the dozens of recorded teleseminars that we have posted on there for free, or the hundreds of articles that we have written on there. All the information is by people that have actually walked through it, so they're not, it's not just theory, it's actually practical experience. Some of the greatest help that we can offer couples is through our weekend intensive that we do. We do them only four times a year, and our next one's going to be coming up in Newark, New Jersey in September, the last weekend in September. And, you know, we want to encourage couples to look at that as an option, the Healing from Affairs seminar. And that's it's a three-day full-on intensive weekend that you're not going to be able to get time to go visit, but that is really the most, it's the best bang for your buck. It gives you, equates to about 36 weeks of therapy without the chance of screwing it up from week to week as some couples could have experienced. So we also do the coaching with a group of coaches that work with us. They all are, you know, they all are, have other vocations, and they do that as a service they offer. It's a for fee service, so we have different types of coaching packages that we'd be happy to talk with you about them, different fee structures around that. Also, the DVD, we also, for those that maybe can't get to one of our weekends, or they want to do something at home, because we also offer a home-based DVD program that is available for purchase if in fact you're willing to do the work. It's self-driven, so there's nobody policing you, and so, but it, you know, buying it and putting it in your house is not like it's not the magic potion that you just kind of walk it around your home and it gets, you know, you require work to be done. And then for some individuals that may be listening in, and they really don't want to do the weekend with other couples, we do private intensives occasionally for a few people that, you know, can afford that resource, and that can make themselves available to travel to the wonderful Pacific Northwest, where our office is located at. But those are probably one of the some of the ways it can help. And then also, Anne is the coordinator of the Beyond Affairs Network, which is a support group only for people that have been betrayed. So it's not for anybody else apart from a betrayed spouse. You can't come as a couple. And if you've had an affair, you're not really welcome to join in and listen. But it's just for those people that have been betrayed, as a service that that we offer for them. They can participate in that. And if you're healing alone as a woman, we do offer a weekend called the Take Your Life Back Weekend, which is specifically, it's designed for women that have been betrayed, whether you're staying by yourself or or if you're in a relationship, but it's just for you as a woman that has been betrayed. And we're also just happens to be this weekend in Charleston. We're having one, but that weekend is now sold out, and our next one is not going to be until October in Phoenix. And so those are just some of the resources that we offer. And if you need to talk, you know, call our office. We're more than happy to talk with you for a little bit, just to give you a little bit more information. Obviously, we want to we're as personal as we can. That myself or Tammy, who works for us, will be willing to talk with you and set up the time if you like to discuss some of our resources a little further, but definitely check out the beyondaffairs.com website. Tremendous amount of resources on there. Online, we encourage you to read through some of that, listen to the, our record programs. As you know, our approach to recovery is going to be a little bit different than you might find in the clinician's office, primarily because we've walked through this ourselves. We're sharing from our experience as well as about 10 years we've been doing this, and we've had the chance to talk with, and this is all we do in terms of helping people is dealing with people that have been betrayed. So it's not one of many things. We specialize in affair recovery, whether that's as a couple or as an individual, whether you've been the betrayed spouse or you've been the person who's been unfaithful. We can really help you through that. Yeah, so give our office a call, 360-306-3367.
Well, blessings to both of you and your family, your children, your grandchildren, and thanks for your candor about your own situation and for helping so many people. We've really enjoyed having you two on today.
Well, it was our pleasure, Richard.
Oh, you're most welcome. And those of you listening, again, it's beyondaffairs.com, and this link is good in perpetuity for you to share if you know someone that's going through this. And let me take you out with Toni Braxton's song that Ann referred to at the outset, Unbreak My Heart. Go with God and be blessed. And we have a lot of great upcoming shows coming in, and including our much-anticipated interview with Cindy Williams. Shirley from Laverne and Shirley is coming up July 27th, 10:30 a.m. Here's Toni, one of the most beautiful, heartbreaking songs of all time. And I pray healing for every one of you that have gone through this, the hurt of betrayal.